Rax Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. Despite the increasing numbers of women entering careers as surgeons, they're leaving mid-surgical training at a higher proportion than men. A recent Australian and UK study was conducted to examine why women choose to leave. Lead author, Dr. Ria Liang, says the myriad stresses imposed on women in training build like a tower of blocks. The trigger for them to leave may seem inconsequential in isolation, but a small action can cause the tower to topple. Dr. Liang is a general and breast surgeon, surgical educator, and diversity in surgery advocate. She's also deputy chair of the college's Operating with Respect Committee. Heather Dawson asks Dr. Liang why the need for this study.
Well, the gender disparity in surgery has been well known for a long time. And one of the issues was that despite selecting very able candidates into training, women were leaving training at twice the rate of men, and it was for reasons other than underperformance. So this struck us as a significant loss to the profession of surgery in terms of aiming for gender equity, but also because the women were often very high performers.
What was known before you conducted your research about the proportion of women in surgery?
When I started this study, the proportion of women in surgery across all the specialties in the surgical fellowship was in the single digits. Since then, concerted action has meant that we are up to the low double digits. So we had actually a little party in the women in surgery section when we cracked double digits. And now we're up to about 12.6% of the total fellowship. But many of those women obviously have graduated in the last 3 to 5 years. And so if we're going to achieve parity over time, we're going to have to do a lot better than we previously have been.
How does your study compare with other research in this area?
Well, the significant breakthrough in the study was that we actually developed new theory and that this gave us new insights into what could be done about the issue. And it's not what you might think. So we came to conclusions that might seem slightly illogical. The main finding was that actions directed at helping women in surgery may actually worsen the problem by making them feel different and by making them the target of genderised behaviours such as harassment and discrimination. And in view of the fact that many of the factors that have previously been considered women's factors such as child rearing now becoming a non-gendered activity because men and women now share these roles, what the study actually showed was that we need broader action that addresses these issues for all trainees and that those that have been previously disadvantaged, and that is not necessarily limited to women, that could extend to, for instance, those of Indigenous or Maori background, those who are of diverse sexualities, those who come from rural areas, you know, that those sorts of people may have more advantage from programs, but the end result being that everyone will be advanced.
Well, could you tell us a bit more about how the study was carried out?
Well, in contrast to previous research, rather than sending out surveys to trainees, which has a rather low response rate, we decided to approach women directly, and not those who were currently in training, because we were very aware that there had been reports of repercussion for speaking out. So we approached those who had already left surgery, and we did it very carefully so that, in actual fact, no one in the existing fellowship would necessarily know whether those women were involved or not, so that there was no risk to their future careers. And so in interviewing them in depth, we brought out these very complex things that really can't be reflected by quantitative research. You know, you can't get people to rate things on number scales or measure means or standard deviations of anything. They really have to describe their experiences in words. And that creates a lot of richness, which led to the new insights.
Well, I understand you were guided by Pierre Bourdieu's social theory. Who's Pierre Bourdieu, and can you explain what it is?
Pierre Bourdieu, he's one of the greatest sociologists of the 20th century, and I knew him from my educational studies because I have 2 degrees in education. His great breakthrough was the understanding that what we believe are natural abilities are often culturally determined. So particular to the study of surgery is the idea of habitus, the way that you hold yourself, the way that you communicate with people, the way that you prefer others to communicate with you. And of course, we've had a certain preferred habitus in surgery until now, a very direct way of communicating, a certain self-confidence, which we're coming to realize is actually more to do with your background and how you identify yourself. And we must stop mistaking this for ability. There are plenty of people who don't fit into that habitus who are going to make very good surgeons.
Now, most of the participants in the research that you carried out decided to leave quite early on in the training, didn't they? So why was that? Why do you think that is?
Well, yes, most of the participants in our study left between 6 and 18 months into advanced training. And this was quite striking because some of them had identified as future surgeons from a very young age, some as early as teenage. So for a lot of them, the preparatory time getting into advanced training had been 10 years or more. It's really a shame that people who would spend that much time and effort getting into advanced training would choose to leave in such a short time. What they told us about this was that it was significantly different from what they had expected, that they weren't valued or taught, that they weren't getting the opportunities that they expected from their advanced training. And that's really a slight on the way that we set up our training and the way that we treat our juniors.
Well, some of the challenges which pushed your subjects to leave early were faced by both women and men. Why would it have been particularly difficult for women?
Well, it was because of gender stereotypes. And so things that men could, for instance, take leave for, women applying for the same reasons couldn't take leave for. And that really got down to a gender expectation. It wasn't due to institutional policies or anything that you could find legally or in workplace law. So, for instance, in our study, one woman reported that a male colleague had put in for annual leave for child-rearing purposes and had it approved while she had been knocked back for the same thing. And with the usual comments about, you know, oh, this is why we don't let women into surgery and why would we train these women, seeing as they all skive off and go part-time. So it's that lack of fairness extended to women, a judgmental aspect that relates to their gender stereotyping within a surgery that is heavily male-dominated.
And do women find it particularly difficult because of societal expectations, do you think?
Yes, this is reflected in the wider literature, so not just in medicine, but in other places such as business or law or engineering, that men who are assertive are called assertive and that they're often praised for it, but women who are assertive are often called words like bossy or shrill or bitchy. So we have to be very careful of what we understand as implicit bias. So it's not that people are intentionally malicious, it's that they have unconscious biases that they're not yet aware of. And we really have to train our selectors and our examiners and our trainers to be more cognizant of these.
Now, Ria, you use a stack blocks metaphor to describe the accumulation of stresses which can cause trainees to leave. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, so stresses are cumulative. We were wondering about why it is that we've had a good 30 or 40 years of good feminist action. And we've also had long lengths of time looking at supporting other disadvantaged groups as well, but we're not moving the needle as fast as we would like. And what we came to realise that because of this cumulative thing, you know, every individual person, and not just trainees but consultants as well, I suspect, are building their own personal tower of blocks. And that when they get to a certain height, the whole thing topples over. So, you know, there's no end to the number of campaigns that you could run. Women in surgery, rural background in surgery, Indigenous and Maori in surgery, diverse sexuality in surgery. You could run endless campaigns, but you'll only ever affect the tower for those who have that particular block stacked in their personal tower. What we really need to do is coordinate ourselves better and look at approaching these things in a much more broad-based and multifactorial way.
Well, as a result of your research, what do you think can be done to help women continue to study and choose not to leave?
Well, I mean, the significant finding is that we shouldn't just look at women. What started as a women in surgery study has actually uncovered the wider issue of the paradoxical effects, the unexpected negative effects of directed action on specific groups. And I think this is the pushback against things like quotas and affirmative action. You know, that people are perceived to be not as good as the others because they are in that group. So people might say, oh, you know, she's only here because of that women in surgery thing, or he's only here because he's Indigenous in background, or whatever. It discounts the very real abilities of people and their presence in the surgical profession on their very own merits. So funnily enough, when you say what can be done for women in surgery, the answer is, well, stop focusing on the women bit and just look at the surgery bit. You know, what can we do for everyone to thrive in surgery?
Okay, so where to from here, Ria? And is more research needed?
Yes, so obviously a lot more needs to be done. There's a lot of areas that we have very little evidence for. So this paper, which has now been published in The Lancet, you know, I've received a lot of questions to say, well, do you think this effect is happening for other groups, and do you think it's happening in other specialties other than surgery? So yes, there is a scope for a lot more research. Personally, myself, I'm starting a PhD this year to investigate it as a sort of mid-career sabbatical, but certainly anyone else who has an interest in it, it would be much better if we can all work together, because these are issues that desperately need addressing.
Dr. Ria Liang. RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Buongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. You can reach the Buongiorno National Network on +613 9863 3111.